evening, everyone. I'd like to call to order the meeting for Tuesday, March 26th. Please rise and join me in saying the pledge of allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Jill, will you please do the roll call?
Member Mark Moyer. Member Dustin Engel.
Here.
Member Matt Weir.
Here.
Member Rick Samuda.
Here.
Chairwoman Susan Quirk.
Here. I'd like to advise everyone here that the board did meet in executive session tonight at 5:30 to discuss land legal and personnel matters. And also, as a reminder for everyone here, all public sessions of the Township of Barry Board of Supervisors are recorded for the purpose of creating accurate minutes. Speakers are asked to limit their comments to 3 minutes or less. And I really would like to remind everyone, we're going to try to stick to that 3 minutes or less, mostly to give everybody in the room an opportunity to speak and to make sure that we're providing a really positive experience here at the meeting. So I really do appreciate your cooperation and ask that if you have something more to offer, that you speak with us either after a meeting or email us or pick up the phone and give us a call again so we can make this a positive experience for everybody at the meeting this evening. With that, we will have our first session of visitor and public comments. If you have something to share with the board, we ask that you approach the microphone, give us your name and your address. And although it's posted in the meeting room, I want to remind everybody attending the meeting that it is and always has been the policy of the township to tape record the public meetings again for the purpose of providing accurate minutes. I did.
Yes.
Hearing none. Pretty miraculous. We will move on now to the adoption of the minutes for March 12th of the Board of Supervisors public hearing minutes. Do I have a motion to approve those minutes?
So moved.
Moved by Mr. Engel.
Second.
Seconded by Mr. Zamuda. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? That motion carries. An adoption of the minutes of the Board of Supervisors meeting from March 12th. I'll make that motion. Do I have a second?
Seconded
by Mr. Engel. All those in favor?
Aye.
That motion carries as well. Next item on the agenda, A through 28, adoption of ordinance number 715 to execute a guarantee agreement in connection with the guaranteed sewer revenue bond series of 2019 issued by the Barry Township Municipal Authority.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm actually going to turn this over to William Schutz and Deli to give you a summary and explanation of the revenue bonds for the sewer authority.
Okay, thank you, Mr. President. Luke Ridelli with RBC Capital Markets. Wayne Schutz is here representing the authority. Also, Ben Kappenstein, the authority's financial advisor from PFM, and Tim Horsman from McNeese Wallace is here. We are introducing to you the guarantee agreement for the proposed financing that the Barry Township Municipal Authority is expected to undertake as soon as potentially tomorrow. In terms of pricing their financing. The short handout that I have, just to give you a quick background on where the financing stands, what we're planning to do, and what the schedule is, I'll walk you through that briefly, and then the ordinance that you have in front of you basically authorizes the guarantee agreement. That's basically what we have done on most of the DTMA financings in the past, so the guarantee agreement is something that's very similar to what you have seen before. The first page of this handout is an interest rate chart. It's basically why we made the decision to move when we are for this financing for the municipal authority. Interest rates have dropped pretty dramatically since November. On this chart, you can see where the line is right now. It represents 1.9% on this index. The lowest that this index ever reached was the summer of 2016, when it was at a 1.29. So we're only, we're only 61 basis points away from the all-time lows that we hit in the summer of 2016. So we were reviewing that information with DTMA officials and the board, and they decided to move forward at this time to try and lock in a good interest rate for the proposed projects that they have. If you turn to the second page, we have a brief outline of what the projects are. It's approximately $10 million of capital projects. All of these improvements are right down the road here at the Clearwater Road facility, replacing or relocating the power center number 2, constructing new digester biogas handling systems, biogas cogeneration unit that also goes with the digester. There's stormwater management work that needs to be done on the site, as well as additional site work that's involved with moving the power station. Certainly Wayne can speak to any of these projects in more detail if you have questions. The proposed financing is guaranteed sewer revenue bonds. So unlike last year when the township issued bonds on behalf of DTMA, because DTMA has a clean slate of bank qualification for the 2019 year, and because the amount was $10 million or less, their bonds, they can issue bank qualified this year. So that's why we're utilizing the authority, issuing their own guaranteed sewer revenue bonds, township providing the guarantee like we've done in the past. Important thing to note, obviously when we do this, that under this structure, we always have the authority's engineer certify a self-liquidating debt report that says that the revenues of the sewer system will be sufficient to pay the debt on this new borrowing. So that's a report that's done by Guggart Horn, submitted by the bond council to DCD. So therefore, the debt goes on your debt statement as lease rental debt, but comes right back off as self-liquidating as a result of that report. So the net impact of the township's borrowing capacity is zero from this financing. One of the things that obviously we have to do anytime we're issuing bonds is update the credit rating. As you know, when the township guarantees the authority's bonds, basically the credit rating is based on the township. So while last Monday we had a conference call with Standard & Poor's, all the authority staff was on, as well as Mr. Christman, also Cheryl was on that call, representing the township. So we went through the authority's finances, and then obviously the call moves over to the township's finances. We talk about the local economy, we talk about capital plans, we talk about debt of the township. And on Thursday, Standard & Poor's reiterated the township's AA credit rating with a stable outlook. You have a copy of that report that was released on Friday, so I'd encourage everybody to read through that, but certainly good news that Standard & Poor's reiterated the township's AA credit rating. So our schedule, as you can see here, last night DTMA's board approved the parameters resolution. If you approve the guarantee agreement, we are scheduled to price the bonds tomorrow, so when we'd be locking in interest rates, and we're scheduled to settle the issue on April the 30th. That's when closing would occur, funds would be available in the DTMA construction fund for their some of these projects that are starting this summer. Last page is the estimated debt service schedule and how this debt is being structured, basically wrapping around the authority's existing debt to try and keep their overall debt in a level format. So these are the estimated maturity amounts. Final maturity is 12/15 of 2037. So your guarantee would apply to this payment schedule as it's estimated. So I'd be happy to answer any questions about this proposed borrowing. As I mentioned, you have the ordinance in front of you that basically just authorizes all the filing that needs to be done, authorizes the self-liquidating debt report, and everything that needs to be signed for closing.
Anyone have any questions for Lou?
I don't have any questions for Lou, but Wayne, good to see you. Curious what you're going to do with $10 million.
Well, as Lou said, we have two real goals in this project. One is to fortify the plant against flooding. Power Center 2 has been inundated 3 times in the last dozen years. It supplies about 85% of the power to the plant, so we want to move it up to what we're now calling the South Campus, which is even higher than the 2011 flood by about 4 feet. Obviously, there's a considerable amount of site work, stormwater, access roads. In addition, we're going to replace and upgrade the biogas handling system, the biogas conditioning system, which takes the moisture and the pollutants out so that when it burns in an engine, it burns very cleanly. And then we're going to have a new building installed with 2 new cogeneration units. Right now, and as Lou said, we have a wraparound on the on the debt service. Right now, it looks like we're going to save between $250,000 and $400,000 a year on cogeneration of electricity and heat recovery. So that's going to knock most of the debt service that we would have to undertake down to almost net zero. I just do want to clarify one thing. There's been a lot of mention and discussion over the past year about the GISA, or the Guaranteed Energy Savings project, which we would construct a new trucked-in waste facility and a second digester. This is completely separate. This is something we would have undertaken without regard to GISA. The GISA project has been, I'll say, rebooted so that we proceed in a slow, methodical fashion to see if that's something we want to undertake at the end of the year.
So you're generating more methane right now?
Correct. We have several pinch points. Number one, the engine that we have now is on its last legs. It's basically probably not up 30% of the time because it's constantly in need of repair. Number two, the gas handling system is a pinch point because we are producing so much gas. And of course, the gas conditioning skid is also a pinch point because it's been overloaded with so much gas. So all these things will allow us not only to properly use the gas, but if we have excess, to handle it in a fashion that's acceptable for air quality.
And so how does that work? So you generate this methane gas, and how does it, you use electricity, right? So you basically power everything you have there, and then you sell some of it back to the grid.
No, we won't be selling any back to the grid as a result of this project.
Okay.
It's probably not ever, because the return on selling it back to the grid is not economically beneficial. But what our goal is to get to a net zero consumption at the plant. And we'll probably, right now with the old cogen, we're probably at 20 or 25% of our purchase capacity. That'll probably bump up to 65 or 70, maybe as high as 80%, again, without any regard to the GISA project, the additional biogas from that second digester.
You mean 80% what? Where you're
80% of our 80% of the power that we purchase now will be generated on site.
Got it.
Okay.
Any other questions for Wayne or Lou? Or Ben?
I want to thank Matt and Rick for helping guide the authority on this one. There were some interesting questions and they've all been resolved.
More? And we have a motion that Ordinance 715 be adopted, approving the execution of the guarantee agreement in connection with the guaranteed sewer revenue bond series of 2019 issued by the Gary Township Municipal Authority.
I'll make that motion.
By Mr. Ware, seconded by Mr. Engel. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? And that motion carries. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Next item on the agenda, update and discussion on the community center project. Mr. Mandia.
Thank you. The board asked for a brief update on the community center project this evening. Here with me is Greg Kousis from Capital Construction Management, who is obviously the owner's representative for the project. Also here to assist in answering any questions that might arise as the discussion moves forward. As the board and the public knows, the project is out to bid, and they're due a week from today, so next Tuesday, April 2nd, 2 p.m., bids will be due. At that point, the team consisting of Greg's Capital Construction Management team, as well as Kimball Bogret Architecture and Site, will convene and evaluate the submissions, and they will formulate and provide results to the board for your review and consideration at the April 9th Board of Supervisors meeting. Over the past several weeks, there's been some inquiries in terms of inquiring about some of the schedule adjustments that we've done over the past several weeks leading up to the bid phase. So I thought this was a good forum to kind of just review those a couple adjustments in the schedule and the reasons for them. The first adjustment that we made to the schedule, and this isn't anything that isn't unknown, just thought it would be good to get that out, was leading into the bidding phase, and when we were having conference calls with our project team to discuss the bids and getting out on the street, Kimball Bogret indicated that they would prefer a little bit more time in formulating the bid packages, also doing some sub-consultant coordination to ensure that the bid packages that we were sending out were as tight as possible, and the project team and the township as a whole agreed that that was a good idea. So that actually pushed the bid date back about 2 weeks at that point. Since the bids have been out on the street through the PennBid website, we heard inquiries from contractors requesting more time in the bidding process to allow them to formulate solid bids to give us the most accurate pricing that they can, rather than padding bids to make sure they're covered. We felt that it was a good practice as well to provide that additional time for the contractors, which kind of brings us to today in terms of the bids being due April 2nd and the board considering awarding those on April 9th. So in a very quick encapsulation of where we've been over the past 7 weeks, that's how we've gotten to the current bid dates and the reasons for a couple of those adjustments in the schedule. So at this point, if there's any other discussion or other information you wanted, I certainly can answer that for you.
Questions for Matt? Does seem to make sense what was done. I think we'll hopefully be looking at some smarter, sharper bids that we'll receive on the 2nd than having rushed. And I think all of us, you and Greg, and certainly the board and the rest of the staff working on this, want to make sure we're being careful and thoughtful. So I think pushing that out just a little bit will get us better numbers. So appreciate the update.
Sure. Susan, I'd like to ask you a question. Greg, in terms of the time frame between bid opening and when we're at least going to be first asked to consider whether to award that, at least according to the current schedule, it's approximately 7 days. Could you explain the process, the level of scrutiny, and the people who are conducting the scrutiny of the bids, their qualifications, what exactly they're going to be looking at when they open these bids in terms of criteria, qualifications of the contractors, qualifications and adequacy of the information disclosed in the bids. Could you describe that process for me a little bit, please?
Sure. The bids will be submitted electronically via the PennBid system. So they'll be opened electronically by the architects after the bid time. If the bid due date has elapsed, that's when they become available for the owner to review. The plan is for Matt, anyone else from the township who choose to participate, myself, and at least two representatives from Kimmel Bregret, immediately to review the proposals next Tuesday. Bids are due at 2 o'clock, so we'll be doing that in the afternoon. Taking a look at the proposals as they're submitted and starting to put together a bid tabulation form, which is simply a spreadsheet laying out each of the proposals that are received for each of the 5 prime contracts. And it's a comparison tool to take a look at the numbers and, you know, however many bidders there are in each of those individual prime packages. The evaluation of the bidders themselves, there's a qualification form that the architect has requested each of the prime contractors to fill out and to submit with their bid. So we'll have some information there that talks about size of the firm, number of projects that they've completed in a similar size range, if they've actually done, you know, municipal buildings, community centers, pool projects. It's really difficult to disqualify someone based on that qualification statement unless there are real problems in their past. That's just part of the function of the public bidding process. There are other requirements for them when they submit their bids, one of which is a bid bond, which is a the bonding document that they get from their individual bonding company that's a 10% of the bid price that not only guarantees their bid, as it is submitted to the township, but also is an indication of their bond ability to do a project of this size. So those are largely some of the major financial qualifications that they need to have to be able to submit a bid to begin with, which is the financial wherewithal and the bonding capacity to submit the bid.
And thank you. My biggest concern is that the review of the open bid is not driven primarily, I wouldn't say primarily, but to a large extent simply by the lowest bidder. In terms of the qualifications of the bidders and the contractors are of great concern to me as well. And so you said two representatives of Kimmel Book Red will be part of that committee. What are their professional qualifications? In other words, are they licensed? Are they certified? Who are those individuals that are going to be taking a look at these open bids?
I believe that Jim Book Red, who's obviously one of the principals, and Jonathan Trump, who has been the project architect throughout the process, will be here on Tuesday to open the bid with us and to start that process, and then we'll continue.
So we have a licensed architect?
Two.
And Jim as well, being licensed. Is Jim a PE or is he?
I believe they're both licensed architects.
Architects, okay. Any PEs envisioned to review the bids once they're open?
Not at this point.
Okay. And in terms of qualification statements, I know you indicated it's a little difficult to disqualify somebody based on that statement, but again, we'll be Jim and Jonathan, who are looking at those qualification statements, and determining the viability of those bidders.
As well as myself, yes.
And you, and are there any particular metrics that you're going to be looking at?
As I said, Mark, in the public bidding environment, it is not possible for a municipal entity to choose one bidder over another simply because they think their qualifications are better. That's not an option in this bidding process. If there are really egregious problems with a bidder, i.e. they've got lots of ongoing litigation, they've got failed projects in the past, and it looks like this would be another problem project for them, I think there is some recourse. Your solicitor can obviously chime in on options available to the township under those scenarios. But it's difficult to disqualify someone if they are qualified based on their bonding and their submitting a full and complete bid.
Greg, based on your past experiences, what's sort of the timeline between the time that you all start to look at those bids shortly after 2 o'clock Tuesday and the time that we might have to review it? I know we're going to discuss it and consider it for our meeting on the 9th, but how long does that normally take for you to get it to the point where we can actually start to try to digest it with your guys?
You'll have preliminary information that afternoon, as will the bid will be public sometime shortly after they're opened through the pet bid system. I think we've indicated on the website or through the bid documents that they will be made public on the pet bid website by 4 p.m. that afternoon. So preliminary information to you could be later that afternoon as well. We will obviously need to take some time to go through the specifics, look at all the alternates that have been submitted and priced, and discuss them and include that as part of the evaluation.
And that, I guess, more to my question, I had the same question, but in terms of the amount of time necessary for you to carefully scrutinize these bids, do that comparison, look at the qualification statements, fact check things. That sounds like 2 hours is not going to be quite enough to do that.
That's why the full recommendation to the board we wouldn't expect to have until probably Friday the earliest.
Okay.
But preliminary information,
you will have it.
Right.
You will know where the numbers are, numbers of bidders, and what the costs are. And Mark, you asked a question earlier about the engineers involved
yes.
in an evaluation. Two of the alternates that we have requested pricing for has to do with foundations, as
right.
you know. So we will certainly have ARM involved in helping us to evaluate those.
And could you explain that for the individuals and for the members of the board, what you mean by the foundation alternatives?
Certainly. The base bid for the project was designed with a micropile foundation system, which are drilled piles down to rock, supporting the column loads for the building. And we also included two alternate foundations. One is injection grouting, which then supports the spread footing. And a second alternate was for what is essentially a proprietary system, which is stone piles with concrete in them, similar in performance to the grouting, the injection grouting system. So there will be three separate prices for three separate foundation systems.
And do you anticipate ARM providing us with a formal written report on all three of those?
No, I wasn't expecting that they would provide us with a written report.
Okay, and do you anticipate at some point in this process that an analysis be provided to us in terms of the potential cost to repair an engineering failure in terms of those foundations, such that we can do a cost comparison in the event of failure to the preventative aspect of our decision-making process? In other words, we certainly don't want to save $2 million on an alternative foundation only to have to spend $9 million to repair in the event of failure. So is there going to be anything like that for this board to consider in that regard?
We certainly want to have a discussion about the cost benefit of the different systems, the cost differential between the two,
right.
and potential for remedial action if you choose option A or option B or option C. For somebody to be able to accurately say you're going to save potentially this much, but it could cost you this much down the road, I don't know that anyone would be able to do that.
Could, because there are two factors for consideration, obviously. First and foremost is public safety. We certainly do not, under any circumstances, want to compromise public safety in the event of a failure to either our guests or to our residents. But we as a board, I envision us having to make a very difficult decision in the event the bids come in at an appropriate price as to which, I mean, that will ultimately be our decision as a board as to which foundation system we adopt, correct?
Absolutely. That's why we bid them as alternate.
Right. And so I would think that at least part of that calculus, if you will, at least as far as I'm concerned, is the differential between the cost of the various systems and the cost to repair. So again, the cost-benefit analysis. I mean,
we'll do our best to advance that conversation and give you some metrics to make some decisions on.
Right.
Until we know what the delta is between them, it's a little hard to even start that analysis.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of coming up with any really accurate specifics, it would just be conjecture, obviously.
I was going to say concrete numbers, but that'd probably be important.
Because I think it's a great question, and when you're faced with making that decision, inevitably you're going to say, well, what happens if it fails? And so, and I remember at least one of the calls, there was some discussion, and one of the engineers gave some anecdotal background on some projects. And so I think it's a good point where nobody's asking for sort of a super... in other words, it's not so much a science but an art. So people who have been doing this for 30,
right.
40 years, what have you seen in your lifetime? What happens when you see these systems fail? And that information will be really helpful to that. So I think there's guys at ARM that have been...
Absolutely.
...testing some failures.
And we can talk through what the process is for remediating a problem, if there is one.
Yeah.
You know, speaking both to the public safety side of it and the building safety side of it, in terms of not wanting to see real failures in the building systems, and if there is some localized issue, what the process is to remediate it.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. And just one other quick comment I wanted to make. You know, it seems to me that our biggest, the easiest way to gain confidence from a contractor is basically, or the only way is really through the bonding process, right? So in other words, all of these contractors have to have the bonding capacity to do a $32 million job. And correct if I'm wrong, but isn't that bonding process, there's an underwriting process.
There is.
Obviously, that they have to go through. It's fairly rigorous. And then in many cases, and I'm guessing in this case too, that the agency or the company that writes that bond has to have a certain rating too.
That is correct.
Okay.
Those are spelled out in the specifications.
Right. So it's not just, you're not going to have a fly-by-night contractor getting a fly-by-night bond from a fly-by-night company because it's spelled out that company has to have a certain credit rating. And so that, it sounds like that's one of our biggest protections. Yeah.
It is.
Any other questions for Greg on that? Thank you both for the update.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. There's no action taken on that tonight, obviously, so we'll just move on to the next item on our agenda. Item 3, consideration of release of the maintenance security provided for the preliminary final subdivision and land development plan for the Milton Hafner Conservatory at the Hershey Gardens, plot number 1250, Mr. Hafner.
Thank you. This plan was approved in April of 2015, reported May of 2015. Since that time, they've pretty much completed construction up there. As a matter of fact, in September of 2017, the Board of Supervisors did release the entire performance security, which was then replaced with this maintenance security, which was posted for 18 months. The 18-month maintenance security period will expire on April 6, 2019. Recent inspection by HRG has led to the recommendation that the security is eligible for full release. I'm recommending that the board authorize the release of the maintenance security in the amount of $1,485.
Anyone have any questions for Chuck? If not, do I have a motion?
So moved.
Moved by Mr. Engel.
Second
by Mr. Zimuth. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? That motion carries. Next item, D6. Consideration of acceptance of performance security for the stormwater management plan for 90 Forest Avenue.
Thank you. This is fairly standard business. 93 Forest Avenue is a home that evidently Lou Verdelli grew up in. And wanted me to tank this, but I told him we weren't going to do that. That home's going to be torn down and replaced with a new home.
Lou calling right now.
HRG has reviewed the cost estimate prepared by the developer's engineer and has recommended that performance security in the amount of $8,264 be provided. I am recommending the Board of Supervisors accept performance security in the amount of $8,254 in the form of cash and enters into the agreement to provide financial security between David W. Umberger and the township for the stormwater management facility.
Questions for Chuck? Do you have a motion to approve?
Moved
by Mr. Weir, seconded by Mr. Engel. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? That motion carries. Item E3, request to hold the Art Show and Culture Fest on Saturday, May 18th, 2019, from, I'm thinking that means 10 a.m., not 10 p.m. 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Chief.
Program just went out.
In conjunction with the Downtown Hershey Association, we've brought this before the board. Art Show and Culture Fest is going to be held on May 18th, requesting to be held on May 18th between 10 a.m. and 5 p.m. So there's a couple different plans here. The first one you see up on your screen is a road closure of West Chocolate Avenue between the bridge and Cocoa to facilitate the setting up of vendors through movement of pedestrian traffic without the interference of motor vehicle traffic. In order to do this, because it's a state roadway, we will need permanent approval by PennDOT, which would require board approval for the closure of this roadway. It would be closed right around 6 a.m. to 7 a.m. to provide for setup of vendors, and then would be closed for a couple hours after the event stops to permit the tearing down of different stands and so forth before we open up the roadway again. There's also a second option that we are looking at in case the show would not generate the amount of vendors that would need to close down that big of an area. And this would only need approval on a local level for Linden between the parking garage area and Chocolate, and then also that first block south of Chocolate Avenue. We would have pedestrian crossing assistance at the intersection of Linden and Chocolate to safely move pedestrians back and forth, but we would not need to close Chocolate Avenue in this scenario. So what we're asking for is the approval for the closure of Chocolate Avenue between Ridge and Cocoa. If the event gets big enough, where would we need to do that so we can have that permit and allow for that shutdown? And then we also have Plan B just in case it wouldn't require that. But we're asking for the approval for that closure just in case we have to go that route. And that closure would, because of commercial vehicle traffic, we would do it similar to what we do for Memorial Day Parade, Halloween Parade. We would actually divert commercial traffic at Hockersville, take them down to 322, and then over to Homestead. And likewise, if they're going westbound, Homestead to 322, and then over to Hockersville Road. That would be a necessity for commercial vehicle traffic. Some of the regular traffic cars, small trucks, and so forth will be able to navigate some of the side streets to get in towards the event.
Just a couple quick questions. I mean, this isn't the first time that the DHA has held an event downtown similar to this. Have you spoken to some of the businesses and HE&R as this would impact Saturday tourist traffic so that they're at least aware that this will be happening?
Yeah, we actually are reaching out to HE&R to see if we can get some assistance in some of the closures as well. So we will have to use as much personnel either on duty or off duty to manage some of these posts. So that's something that we work with them to manage some of this traffic. They will also be able to usually try to get some of the traffic into that entrance right in front of Houlihan's to get in the parking garage area. And we might be able to facilitate some of that smaller traffic to get in there as well. We've been working with our business partners throughout all these events where we shut down Chocolate Avenue buildings.
This is sort of a question for you and maybe Lauren, but at what point would you be able to comfortably make the decision whether you're going with Plan A or Plan B so the businesses and residents have time to kind of know what's happening road-wise?
All right, so I guess just to kind of piggyback on what Garth was saying to your previous question, you know, we've also talked with, from the downtown Hershey perspective, some of the businesses in the Newtown Square project, they seem open to it for sure. And, you know, sorry, this won't stay on. Thanks. and we want to make sure that we're continuing to maintain that good communication. In terms of number of vendors, you know, I think at our next meeting, we'll look at a couple different layouts and see what makes sense. I mean, obviously, you know, we've held the event on the stretch of Chocolate before. We know that it's possible. We know that it certainly adds to the event. We also are very much aware of what that means from a traffic and detour perspective for the community and also for our visitors coming into Hershey. So we want to be really thoughtful before we do anything. You know, I have some really good discussions with Garth and his department, Lieutenant Frey and and their department, just regarding what would make sense. We were initially looking at just closing the block between Bridge and Linden. We talked about extending it to Cogo so that there's less of a concern with vehicles trying to enter the garage on Chocolate. But again, you know, the amount of vendors and layout will ultimately dictate what we do, and if it doesn't make sense to close it, you know, we certainly don't want to do that. The other thing I just wanted to note, Garth had mentioned a 6 a.m. road closure. Lieutenant Bray actually asked if we could do 7 a.m. We're evaluating that, but if we can help to align things better with the police department's labor and potentially avoid some overtime charges and shift change dynamics, you know, we certainly want to be able to do that too. So,
I do have a question about the motion, actually, because it says the suggested motion is to hold the event, and I believe we already probably approved the event, but this motion seems to be more in line with giving you the ability to actually close the roads that are necessary for the event. So if the board's comfortable with that, I'd like to alter the motion. We already approved it, the event itself, a while back.
Correct, yeah. We would, essentially the approach we're hoping to take tonight is to get the approval to close Chocolate should we choose to go that direction. It's always easier to have the PennDOT permit in hand and then pull it back, and we'll be sure to keep the board and the public up to date with the direction we choose, and of course coordinate that with the police department.
So would it be accurate to say to give the police department the authority to close Chocolate Avenue and necessary roads for the event? Would that cover?
Is that sufficient? There you go.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Does anybody else have any questions? Sorry to ask them. Anybody? No. I'm not sure we're getting that. Right. Okay. Well, then, since I butchered the motion, I'm going to make it now. I'll make the motion to approve the police department's closure of Chocolate Avenue and other necessary roads for the 2019 Art Show and Culture Fest on Saturday, May 18th, 2019, from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Do I have a second? Seconded by Mr. Weir. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? And that motion carries. Next item, F2, request the closure of West Arena Avenue between Glen Road and Valley Road for the annual St. Joan of Arc Church Festival, June 20 through 22, 2019.
Chief? Sorry, I think you've asked me to talk loud. This would be for the St. Joan of Arc Festival, the annual festival, we've closed this block down, the 300 block of West Aruba, across from the school, just to facilitate the pedestrian traffic, and also they propose some handicap parking within that area as well. So this is just our request to be able to close this down for the event. We won't have any posted man by police personnel. We'll make a request for the barricades, and the event organizers will actually place the barricades prior to the event, and then also tear them down afterwards. We just make sure that everything is placed properly when they do it.
Do you have any questions for Chief? All right. If not, do I have a motion to close West Arena Avenue on the evening of June 2021 and 22 from 5 p.m. to 10 p.m. for the annual St. Joan of Arc Festival?
So moved.
Moved by Mr. Zamuda. I'll second that. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? And that motion carries. Next item, proclamation supporting equal pay for women in the workforce in Gary Township and observing Equal Pay Day on Tuesday, April 2nd.
Juliet Walden from the Hershey Indivisible Group has asked us to support them in proclaiming April 2nd Equal Pay Day in Derry Township to support equal pay for women. April 2nd is the approximate date that the typical woman must work to into the new year to make what a typical male has made at the end of the previous year.
We've had this request from them before, and we've also approved this in the past as well. So thank you for bringing it forward. Does anyone have any questions for Jill? Hearing none, I'll make the motion that the Township of Derry Board of Supervisors support the Pennsylvania Equal Pay Day proclamation proclaiming April 2nd, 2019 Equal Pay Day in Derry Township. Do I have a second?
I'll second.
Seconded by Mr. Engel. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? And that motion carries. Now time for board correspondence. Start with Mr. Smith.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to ask you all a question. What do you think Lancaster, York, Steele, Pittsburgh, Philadelphia, Allentown, Erie, Harrisburg, and State College have in common?
They're in Pennsylvania.
They're in Pennsylvania. Okay, well, I'm asking another question. What do you think Connecticut, Delaware, Maryland, New York, Ohio, Rhode Island, Minnesota, Missouri, Mississippi, Nebraska, New Hampshire, and North Carolina have in common? They all in the United States. Good question. They've all decriminalized small amounts of marijuana.
Did they decriminalize it, or did they
decriminalize it?
Or did they simply impose a different penalty, monetary penalty?
Yes, instead of a misdemeanor, they made it a summary offense.
Right, which is
indifferent.
Which is a crime. So they didn't decriminalize it; they simply changed the sanctions for that crime.
Okay. What I'd like to propose is that the board begin discussion on amending our ordinance with the help of the police department to reduce the penalties for small amounts of the substance. And usually those substances, those amounts are less than 1 ounce of marijuana and let's see, what was the other one? Less than 8 grams of hash.
I think certainly this is something we should discuss offline and with the chief and his staff, talk about the reasons why.
That's why I'm making a motion just to begin the process.
Can you read the first list again?
Really? Okay. Lancaster, York, Steele, just did. Pittsburgh and Philadelphia. Philadelphia was the first city to decriminalize, to reduce the penalty.
Thank you. Well, they put people up and call it decriminalization.
Erie, Harrisburg, and State College. And there are more that are getting ready to get on the books. I feel it's time that we stand up and do this. It would help the police department immensely, reducing their workload, the prosecutors' workloads, and we give them time to deal with more serious crimes.
So I think it would be helpful to hear from Garth at a future meeting.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
I just want to start the process.
Thanks for bringing it up. I like the way you brought it up.
I want to get pizzazz in there.
Yeah.
I would have done a musical number, but I really stink singing.
Do you have any more places, or is that
No, that's it.
Okay.
I can give you an example of some of the reduced fines. Essentially, what it does is it takes out jail time for the first one, two, or three offenses. But with each offense, the penalty itself increases. Mm-hmm. And like a third penalty may be an obscene number, like $1,000 in community service. Mm-hmm. But it takes, and the offender, it doesn't have a black mark on his record because it is considered a summary offense.
Right, right.
So, and that's advantageous to the people that are taken down by this particular issue.
Mm-hmm. I don't know about any of you, but I don't know anything about this, so I think we should.
I've been asked about this ever since I got on the board. People have stopped me and asked me, well, are you going to talk about this? And finally somebody hit me up the other day, and I said, I think I should say something at this point. Let's get it on the books and start working on it.
Okay.
Matt, anything? I have nothing tonight.
Just wanted to mention quickly, we had a really great Hershey Community Center open house this past Saturday. I couldn't really count, but I'm going to guess we had maybe 100 people, maybe a few more than that. And it was a great opportunity to build some understanding and educate people about a possible project and what it can bring to the community. I also gave people an opportunity to learn a little bit more about the Capital campaign, and we were pleased to share with that group and share with this group here that to date the Capital campaign has raised over $2.7 million. So very, very encouraged by that, and there's a lot of work to go still, but that's a great start to the Capital campaign. The goal we set was $5 million, and that work continues every day to reach out to businesses and individuals, and we're very appreciative of the generosity that we've seen so far. If you want to add about that, Matt, just about the event, I think people overall were...
It was well attended.
Yeah, very lovely. Just a
great question.
Yeah, it was a nice format. People had a chance just to kind of walk around the room and ask questions. And, nice to be with community members, so thank you and your staff for your help.
Sure, thank you.
Mark?
I have a new correspondence or quiz question.
Yes, I'm going to bring up a comment that I neglected to when we were having the conversation about the community center. Just wanted to update the public and the board's aware of it. We had a we had at our last meeting we voted to move forward with the second phase of the SFA report, and so we quickly did that, and within 4 days we had a conference call to sort of kick off that second phase. And so we expect that second phase report to be back probably mid-April, something like that, 4 to 5 weeks from when we had the conference call, so probably mid-April. And so I think that I, as one board member, I can't speak for the others, but I think that that's, it's very important. I feel that I need to see that report, and we need to figure out, you know, have a better sense of where we're going before we would approve any construction contract. So I just want to give that update.
I didn't know whether it was appropriate to say anything at that point, too, but I reiterate that those feelings. I think we, it's vital that we get that report, that we be able to digest it and thoroughly evaluate it before we award any bids on that project. But we're not there yet.
No, there's a lot of things we have to look at first, but most of us have been involved with this since, 2014, so this is not the time to rush. We want to make sure that we're taking the same amount of time to go through these next steps. So I did want to mention, too, that tomorrow is the next Hershey All Things Diversity series at the Hershey Story, and it's sold out, which is really great. And we are going to attempt, just keep your fingers crossed, to live stream this on the Township YouTube page. So hopefully it works if I do it correctly. So if it doesn't, we'll try the next time. Now I'll go round table. Chief, any report for tonight?
I just wanted to make a comment on our launch of our crime portal.
Could you say again, launch of your what?
Crime Watch portal, about a week and a half ago. Still kind of learning the ins and outs of it and what we're going to put up there. But we see it as another way of being a little bit more transparent in what we're doing and how we're working for our community.
Thank you. Dave?
I have nothing this evening. Thank you.
Tom, how are those problems?
Plows are away and the salt spreaders are slowly going away. So yeah, and we're out on routine patrol from time to time.
I think we're out of the snow season, right?
Hopefully. You may now say the S word.
Yeah. Thank you and your staff for all you did this year.
Excuse me, if I may.
Yeah, of course.
Tom, I have a quick question. The crosswalk at Element Bridge on the south side.
It's on our curb and sidewalk.
Yeah.
Well, it would be the north side.
The north side, okay.
The west side. West side probably would be the orientation. Yeah, that's on our curb and sidewalk list for this year.
Any particular period of time? I mean,
well, generally, do we fit that? It's generally about July.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you. Transportation meeting.
Sure.
Yeah, and that gets a crosswalk once it gets warm, right?
Right.
That's a thought. Yeah.
Well, the material that goes down for that, I'll elaborate on that a little bit. The material that goes down for that crosswalk is thermoplastic, which is a little pricey. Mm-hmm. So my intent would be to put the ramps and the walk in and wait to see what happens with PPL coming down through there until we go applying that material to the resin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Thank you, Tom.
Is there, you know, that PPL, that could be a pretty long period of time that you put it on. Is there any merit to painting it still?
We could do that given.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not sure. I don't think it's going to be that long.
It is, yeah.
Yeah, I don't think so.
I guess we could consider that one.
I mean, if it's going to approach or whatever. Yeah, if we come close to school time and they're not down through there yet, certainly painting would be an option.
Yeah.
Thank you, Tom.
Yep.
And welcome back.
Yeah,
congratulations. congratulations on the birth of your son Henry.
Yes, I'm happy to be back.
Thank you very much. I'm happy to do that. I don't know how to support this. So. It's new. I've forgotten how to function. Okay, great. I wanted to let everyone know that we have officially started construction on our circulation desk today. So there's a big tarp up, and we've offloaded our circulation desk to some folding tables next to the desk, so everything should run smoothly. But we also don't have access to our outside book drops for the duration of construction. People are happy, they can certainly return items during operating hours, and then if they can't, we'd be happy to look at letting those fines go. It would be small amounts of fines anyway, considering that they could just wait until the next day that they were open. But if there's any questions on the construction, people can obviously talk to me. And other than that, I'm just grateful for Jeff's work leading the organization in my absence. Thank you very much.
We should put that on the website, that they can't make outside deposits.
Yeah. Jill, you could add that in the email, too. Thank you, Laura. Cheryl, anything?
Nothing, thank you.
Matt, anything else this evening?
Yes, just a few quick items. In relation to what Justin had just mentioned in terms of the project schedule, and the project team, once again, we're trying to be prepared for any scenario. If the board ends up not awarding on April 9th, we are going to be requesting the contractors to provide a price not only for a phased opening during 2020, but also a non-phased opening, which would carry the project into early fall if we would end up backing the schedule up, so that we wouldn't run into a situation where we need to rebid. So we have those prices. They're good for 90 days. So we're building that into the request now so that there wouldn't be additional expenses to rebid it later. So I just kind of wanted to let the board know that too.
So if we didn't award on April 9th, what does that do to the phasing plan?
That pushes well into that second summer to the point where we're kind of on a line of whether we would be able to open or not. So I'm not saying we wouldn't be able to open. Mm-hmm. We're going to delay at one meeting.
Yeah.
But we just want to be prepared to have a price. We're going beyond that summer and a non-phasing option for the contractors, just so we don't have to rebid it. So yeah. We have those numbers at hand.
So you're saying there's like a 2-week cushion?
Yeah, didn't you say that was built into the bids, that that phasing option, that there was a little bit of wiggle room?
There's a little
technical term, but
yeah. And my understanding, and Greg's not here, I think he left.
Yeah,
you know, my thought was that the bids as they come in, the phased option would build in the 90-day window for approval, so that would absorb any decision that the Board of Supervisors would have to make. There's a 90-day built-in window at the front end of the bids, and we can confirm that with Greg, but you know, that would seem logical to me. And then in what Matt's discussing in the phased option versus a non-phased option gives the Board of Supervisors an apples-to-apples comparison of, if you go with a phased approach and try to open the pool in the summer of 2020, what that cost is versus if the project was spread out a little further and it wasn't realistic or practical to open the pool in the summer of 2020, what that number would look like, so you can make an informed judgment.
And not only that, but what the income would be related to opening early versus opening later. So there's just
correct.
A lot of things
there is.
Down here.
There is.
And correct me if I'm wrong, generally speaking, a phased opening would cost less than a single opening?
I really couldn't speculate on that.
It certainly helps the contractors. In other words, they don't have to turn over the entire the entire building at once. It gives a little breathing room for them to be able to complete the outdoor community facilities and still build the northern part of the building while they're being used. It, it opens their schedule up a little bit, as opposed to having to turn everything over.
Reduces the likelihood of liquidated damages or something to that effect.
It does, but also be aware, too, that there are some costs that come into that for that phasing in terms of perimeter fencing, site adjustments to allow the public to be on site safely
right.
while construction is going on. So there are some costs, but I think in general, from what Greg had mentioned, there should be at least some relief to the contractors in terms of schedule pressure.
And Susan's point, though, that both those scenarios would alter revenue expenses
would
be like that as well. Lots of
things to look at.
It is. So other than the community center, we're also preparing for some spring and summer community events.
Were you doing something other than the community
center? Yes. We are doing other things. April 13th is our annual Easter egg hunt for our smallest of residents at Shank Park, beginning at 10 a.m. Also, our annual fishing derby, we're geared up for May 4th at Bullfrog Valley Pond, starting at 8 a.m. for kids 12 and under. Something new this year, we're going to be having a spring fling disc golf tournament May 11th at Shank Park, starting at 10 o'clock. And the interest for that disc golf tournament is really high right now. And then next agenda item, we plan to have the Memorial Day parade authorization to the board. So we'll have some more permit discussion for road closures. And then also just encourage everyone, we have a lot of bus trips. We have our drive-in movie lineup all set for the summer. So I encourage folks to check the website for all the activities that we'll have coming up.
Great.
Yep.
Thanks. Matt, anything this evening?
Thank you.
Anything from you?
Nothing more, thank you.
Lauren?
Just a couple of funding updates. We received notice this week that we'll be receiving $250,000 from the Dauphin County Local Share Municipal Grant Program for the fire station debt reduction request that's submitted annually. We would anticipate that we'll probably work with them, and I talked with Rodney briefly to come in for a six-year request to essentially close that out. Also today, we received notice that we are receiving $1 million through the Commonwealth Financing Authority's Multimodal Transportation Program. That's for the Sand Hill Road Relocation Project. That we've been discussing for some time. So we will be pulling together our transportation team here and talking with our partners to see how we move that forward.
Very exciting.
It is.
Nothing,
thank you.
Chris?
Nothing further, thank you.
And I forgot one thing, if I may add. Just wanted to update members of the public and that we've been talking about more planning downtown and inviting a planner to take a look at a little bit more specifically than we did a couple years ago. Obviously, we changed the ordinance a couple years ago, but we recognized that we maybe didn't get everything right and that we were going to invite a planner. So sure enough, we did have Urban Design Associates from Pittsburgh come and meet with us and a team of us, and they have submitted a proposal, and we are working with them to sort of trim that proposal, and there'll be more information coming as we work towards figuring out not only how we trim it, but how we're going to pay for it. So that there is work being done there.
And I would just add that there was a lot of good work done years ago based on the information that everybody had at that time. So I don't know that we didn't get it right, but now a couple years later, it's more in focus with the downtown's more developed and things. I could tweak it all.
I think we didn't get it right, but that's okay.
All right, next item on the agenda, I'll make a motion to approve accounts payable of $443,218.78 and payroll of $346,242.76. Do I have a second?
Second.
Second by Mr. Zamuda. All those in favor?
Aye.
And that motion carries. Now it's time for visitor and public comment. Again, please keep your remarks to 3 minutes or less. Let us know your name and your address.
I thought I'd get to sit down tonight. Greg, this is addressed to you. When you were asking a question about all the different cities in Pennsylvania, first thing that came to my mind was the number of murders related to drugs. When you mentioned the states, think of the states you mentioned, same situation. Being a healthcare professional for 37 years, working in substance abuse treatment as one of our programs, why don't we just go ahead and start handing out syringes and opium too. I think 1 ounce is just as dangerous as 1 pound. It takes one person behind the wheel of a car to wipe out a whole family. We have laws in the books for the purpose of safety to people of our community. Take a look, read the paper when we have concerts, out-of-towners come in. Most of the arrests are with drugs. Do we want to say, come on in, bring your weed, we won't charge you? Or do we want to say, this is not a drug count? I really think you should rethink that. But again, look at the stats. All the states, North Carolina, shootings, and are related to drugs. Majority, I would say, and maybe the chief can back me up on this, I'd say 80% of the shootings are drug-related. Bad buys. That means somebody has to get that one out to somebody there, which means more and more people are going to come in. And if somebody doesn't pay, then you get them shot. So I think that's a very, very poor decision. As a township supervisor, I think that should be the furthest thing from your mind. That should be left up to the state of Pennsylvania and the police, not a township supervisor. And Mark, and you're bringing up a very good question when you talked about the cost related to the foundations. I was surprised he couldn't answer your question because it's right not less than 100 yards from where this is going to be built. Once you talk to the Derry Township School District, talk to them about how much money it cost them, how much downtime, what was the expense to rehouse and to educate the kids in that school for how long? Over a year. So, and if you compare in regard to the square footage and pressure or weight of the building, an elementary school is not going to weigh as much as a, you know, what, 500,000-gallon pool. So I think that's a no-brainer. Just ask them how much money it cost. What type of foundation did they use? And what was their downtime? And what did it cost the taxpayers, again, to get it back up and running? Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Gamble. Anyone else?
Good evening. Wayne Rivers, 815 Cypress Court. I appreciate your pizzazz kind of thing. I'll come every 2 weeks to hear Rick's fun facts. Rich won't, but I will. You mentioned that we got $2.7 million. Is there any way to see the list of donors for that? You know, anybody above?
Well, that would kind of, it's all proprietary. I mean, if you had given, for example, you probably wouldn't want your name shared at this point.
I'd say anonymous.
So what, anybody who's given $5,000 and above will have their name in a plaque in the building, and people who've given $10,000 and above will have their name on that plaque, plus on other naming opportunities. So I think at that point, that's probably when those names will get shared.
Okay.
But it's a mix of individuals and businesses.
Got you. Okay. And some of those are verbal, though, right? I mean, some of those aren't pledge cards.
There are fewer than six who have committed who have not yet submitted their pledge card.
Okay.
So it's a very small percentage.
IOU or anything like that?
No, it's just that, I mean, you can imagine that these conversations take a long time to come to fruition, and people have committed but haven't physically mailed in the card yet. So.
Okay. Justin, I appreciate your comments saying that we should take a look at phase two before some decisions are made. Mentioned earlier, bids are in April 2nd, board meeting April 9th. I think that's putting the cart before the horse. Take a look at these numbers, see what's going to come in on that.
And you need to say something, Wayne, that's why I put it out.
lastly, there's many people in the township that say business as usual, et cetera, when it comes to the township. And one thing that's been relevant here in the past few weeks that kind of concerns, it does concern me, is you've got, it was about 2 months ago I stood up here and asked about the firm or the consulting outfit that was trying to get state, federal grants for the township, for the community center, which was Griffin, Stevens, and Lee. And then in the meantime, you got Stevens and Lee who are suing the township. To me, that standing there with their hand in front of you at one point, but they got a knife in your back in the other. Is that what we want to, is that how we want to conduct business in the township? Reward somebody that's trying to get over on you? I think we should consider, you should consider, our agreement with Griffin, Stevens, and Lee, and give that opportunity to somebody else if that's what they want to do. Message needs to be sent. If you want to do business with the township, let's make it clean. Okay? Thank you.
Good evening. Steve Seidel, 450 West Granada Avenue, Hershey. I got a couple of things, a couple of just quick items. So, and then one final item. So is there a question or concern about some of the, you know, a lot more houses getting knocked down in town, and new houses going up, and when those go up, what I'm seeing happening is sidewalks, curbs, alleys, roadway getting chewed up pretty badly. Is there, I heard, you know, some discussion of release of security or putting up security. What's the policy of the township with respect to those and making sure that our, you know, those amenities are restored at the builder's cost or at the, you know, the homeowner's cost who's contracted for that construction as opposed to the township?
Joe, can you explain how that works?
This might be a two-part, probably look at Tom as well. For simple home construction, demolition, there is no bonding for performance or how they treat the roads, how they treat the sidewalks. Ultimately, the property owner adjacent to the sidewalks are responsible for them. However, I believe if they cut into the roads, that Tom probably looks at that a little bit differently.
Yes, if they cut into the road to replace the curb or something of that nature, they need to have a permit, an HOP, a highway occupancy permit to do that, and their works inspected. We have no mechanism to deal with the alleys.
Okay, well, there's a little bit of both of that going on throughout the township. As I've said before, I do a lot of walking around the township, the downtown area, and you know, this isn't so much of an issue with remodeling work, but certainly with the new houses, because most of them, and it's, you know, it's a good thing, you know, build a brand new house, you know, you got to put in new utilities and so on. Some of those require, you know, a cut in the road, some don't. But just to have the equipment and everything else that's going on, the roads, the sidewalks, the curbs, they're all taking a beating, including the strip between the sidewalk and the curb, you know, where it's not necessarily left graded off properly. Some of these are in progress right now. Certainly glad to provide more detail on specific locations, but I think the township needs to think about how, and it does apply to single family homes. I'm not talking about major projects. I'm talking about single family homes. So that's the first point. I just want the board to think about, you know, that, because otherwise it's coming, going to come back on the township, and it's going to come back on the residents to cover those costs, and that's not there. Not to mention the fact that they're in bad shape in the meantime.
Steve, excuse me. Are you talking, one of your specifics, is it the alley behind Cocoa Avenue?
Actually, no. That's
actually happening. That's my alley.
Yeah, maybe that's the next avenue. No, that's right near where you live.
Right,
so.
And my neighbor talked to the builder, and they're going to fix the road up in the corner where they bring their trucks in. They're tearing up the corner. You're tearing the corner up. The cabin is alligatoring. And
that's part of what happens.
They personally have pledged to repair that and in front of the house there.
But it's not clear to the public, you know, right, what commitments are made, if there are even any commitments, if there are any regulations, whatever. I don't want to use my 3 minutes on that one point.
No, it's
more
of a timeless one anyway, because it's a conversation.
Okay. The second is, I just want to make the board aware, Chuck, I don't know if you've already made them aware, but the last zoning hearing board meeting a week or two ago. Interestingly, and Justin, I think you've heard me say this already, I think the zoning is broken. And Susan, I'll give you an example. It's broken both ways. You've heard me talk about some of what I think are excesses in terms of what's been put into the design in the downtown corridor, in particular in Hershey Mixed Use. It's broken in other ways, too. At the last zoning board, hearing board meeting, there was a business proposing to expand that before, it's in a clearly commercial area, and they're currently in the Hershey Mixed Use Zone. Before the zoning change, they would have been permitted to do what they're proposing without the need for a variance. Okay, and one of our objectives of the board was to reduce the number of applications for variances and so on, reduce that load. This is a case where now they need a variance because they were not included in a commercial overlay. They were in what was a neighborhood commercial previously, and now they're in the Hershey Mixed Use Zone, even though it's clearly a commercial strip. This is along 322, right near between the Sunoco Station and the Members First Credit Union. So, you know, there's some things that need to be fixed, okay? So, again, that's the other direction from anything you've heard me talk about here. But I think all of those things need to be, you know, get checked, fixed, and gone over with a fine-tooth comb to really get the right balance. And you've heard me say balance. It's about balance. So, before. So, that's I just want to make sure the board is aware of that. Just one more thing to look at when that process goes. And glad to hear that something is happening with that. Justin, appreciate that going forward. And I think any opportunity there is to get some members of the public involved, I think would be a good thing. Certainly a consultant who knows these matters is good. But I think you need to get some input from the residents as well as the businesses in the downtown area, in the Hershey, in town area.
Yeah, there's definitely a public outreach sort of in scope.
Yeah, I'd be glad to help in any way I can. I will say before I make my last comment about the bidding process. You've heard me talk before, and I haven't maybe properly introduced my credentials, but I am a registered professional engineer. That's the name. I have been involved with both planning, design, construction, mostly on the utility side, but relative to hydrology, relative to hydraulics, and a number of other areas. I'm not a geotechnical engineer, but I certainly have worked with a lot of geotechnical engineers and sought their input, sought their expertise on various projects. And so I appreciate Mark Moore's comments and concerns. I think that the whole geotech issue on this project is a significant one. It's not a simple one to evaluate. Probably geotechnical issues are some of the most complicated engineering issues, which is probably why I'm not one of those experts. But anyway, there are experts out there. I know ARM's a good firm. I think that needs some very careful consideration by the board. The other comment I'll make, and that's I've managed projects from a couple hundred thousand dollars to tens of millions of dollars, and having only a couple weeks to evaluate those bids is really, really tight. So, I mean, I know you're also waiting for the other report, so I'm encouraged that, if you're going to kind of consider both pieces at once, I think that's a good thing. I know you want to get on with this, but I think there's a lot of complexity, and especially when you're talking public bids, and is it five primes on this?
Yes.
That adds even more complexity. And I've also, as a professional engineer, I've been on projects both in the private and public municipal sector when I was in consulting, and I've been the one who had to administer the, both, like I said, design all the way through construction, involving construction administration and inspection, and I dealt with some contractors who frankly shouldn't have been on some of those jobs, from some smaller jobs to some big jobs. I understand the difficulty of disqualifying a contractor with a public bid, but I think we really have to, make sure, especially with the geotech work. We have three options. I think we really have to scrutinize whether the contractors that have been on those three options have any experience with those other options. And if they don't, that's another risk factor in addition to just the design and the inherent risks with a particular foundation type, is does that contractor that we're choosing have any experience doing that type of a foundation? And I think that's something definitely worth considering. So at any rate, I'm not an expert on those particular topics, but I think I have enough experience to say, you know, there's some stuff here we really got to be careful about, or we're going to end up with some problems. So,
good point.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Anyone else have any comments this evening?
I am short. Tracy Brown, 319 Park Avenue. I wasn't planning on speaking, but Rick had brought something forward for the board to consider. And I don't have a position either way, but I would hope that in your consideration, if this is something that you're seriously pursuing, that it is fact-based, research-based, and done in consultation with law enforcement and experts in the field, rather than hyperbole and fear-mongering in the community. So thank you. Natalie at 502 Sophia Circle. And I just have the same question as I had the last meeting. It sounds like the SFA report is underway, part two. And I was just wondering what decision was made in regards to competing with the local businesses, the local fitness businesses.
It's a great question. The decision hasn't been made. But we recognize that to make that decision, we need to have some financial analysis with both options. And so that's the path we're going down right now.
Will the business plan be updated before construction starts for the new fitness center?
Well, I think that what we said tonight is that as one board member, I think the other board members feel the same way, that we'll want to see phase two completed before we would decide to move forward with awarding the contract.
And then the business plan will be updated too after reviewing both of those?
Yeah, that's right. So that's correct. And just to be clear, I think Matt would agree. I mean, it's always going to be, the business plan will continue to be fluid, right? Up until, just continue to be updated and fine-tuned. And so, yeah.
I for one, hope and expect that a fairly thorough analysis be done with respect to anticipated revenues, anticipated expenses, similar to the operations plan that was presented earlier and which has been somewhat discredited by the most recent report. Because I think those are huge components of whether or not the facility can be operated in a fiscally responsible manner and whether the physical plant will be the type of structure that can be sustainable.
So just to clarify, that's what phase two is,
right?
Yeah.
And we get to see that too, the public?
Absolutely.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you. Anyone else?
My name is Tom McLaughlin, one of the investors in the powertrain on Granada Avenue. I guess I would ask you, when you're thinking about whether you would want to compete with a local business, think back to the time when you entered into the lease with the group that runs that. Did you disclose that in 2014 you actually began discussions of doing something like what you're contemplating on this rec center? I can tell you as an investor, I'm more intelligent than to throw money in a project like that. So I've worked in Lancaster. I've seen the same type of issues that arise in Manheim Township. Hey, you're free to do what you want, but I think if you look at it from a professional perspective, which I think you all are when you listen to the discussions here just tonight in terms of the different things that you guys have going on in your township, I would look for at least you guys to think about the fact that that was not disclosed to people that put a lot of money into that project. I can't take a loss of $700,000 and operate a business. Most for-profit entities can't. further find out that you even entered into a for-profit venture without knowing that the municipality was contemplating competing with you? I'll leave it at that.
Thank you. Any other comments this evening? Hearing none, I'll make a motion to adjourn. Do I have a second?
Second.
Second by everyone. All those in favor? Thank you all for coming this evening.